Today, the Support Kaleidoscope Turns, the DFA Daily for the 30th of March, 2020. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. The third stimulus package has been announced and it aims to prevent firms from laying off employees in order to ensure that the economy, quote, bounces back once the threat is passed. The government will pay firms $1,500 a fortnight per employee for the next 6 months to prevent employers firing workers that they'll need once restrictions are lifted. And that's $130 billion of package aimed at around 6 million Australians who will need, quote, a lifeline in the months ahead. Businesses of all sizes will be eligible, while workers will need to have been employed by the business for more than 12 months to receive the payment. The payments will start in the first week of May and will be backdated to March. We want to keep the engine of our economy running during this crisis, Morrison told the media. But of course, the question remains of whether the layoffs this part of the package seeks to avoid have already happened, with long lines for Centrelink support dominating the news last week, amidst a report that 1 million people are already out of work. We're working now to a whole set of new rules, Morrison said, warning that some countries could see both their societies and economies collapse. And elsewhere, as reported in FinTech Business, Andrew Haslip, the head of financial services content for Asia Pacific at Global Data, said that the recent upswing in the number of authorized deposit-taking institutions, or ADIs, driven by the introduction of neobanks to the market, could be set to reverse in the light of the current health issues. According to Global Data, up to a quarter of ADIs could exit the market within the next 5 years, either via sales or mergers, as a result of mass unemployment and a decreased appetite for credit following the crisis. And they anticipate that current government stimulus measures to support businesses and individuals will only provide temporary relief, while lending appetites will dissipate and the banks will feel the squeeze over the next few months. Loan growth will also suffer despite efforts to keep lending to businesses and households at extremely attractive rates, they said. And the Reserve Bank of Australia and government funding to lenders will help, but is highly uncertain whether there will be sufficient appetite for credit to see anything more than marginal increases in 2020. New residential mortgage lending will collapse during the weeks, possibly months, of lockdown and enforced social distancing, as even viewing a property safely becomes a challenge. Spending, barring panic buying, will decline and businesses will be hesitant to take on even attractive loans when they have no income. And Global Data stated it expects the quarterly profits of the banks to drop dramatically and it will hit the major banks harder, although will likely provide a more drawn-out squeeze on the non-banks and non-major banks. A further reason to suggest that smaller lenders won't survive the decade. Given the expected scale and length of the disruption to the Australian economy, it's no surprise that key banking indicators will suffer. The government stimulus measures for the banking sector and broader economy will limit the fallout, he said. What will be enduring are the effects that mass unemployment, possibly long-term, will have on lending, and the increased use of automatic digital decisioning on loans. Large swathes of Australians are about to become non-standard risks, and lenders are going to have to be able to roll with that for years to come. Those that can adapt will be among the fewer lenders that we expect to see in 2025. And in relation to the domestic market more broadly, Mr. Hazlitt noted that in the past, including during the 2008 global financial crisis, the impact on the ASX, which are largely delayed, which suggests that the Australian stock market, already down over 30% from its peak, is yet to hit its floor. The internationalisation of the financial crisis in September 2008, when it first became a clear and present danger to Australia, did not result in the bottoming out of the Australian Securities Exchange until February 2009, 5 months later, he said. In the current climate, where the ASX has already fallen by 30% from its recent peak in February 2020, Mr. Hazlitt believes there will be further left to fall, and that the floor won't be hit until the third quarter of 2020. It's highly unlikely that the ASX will have seen its bottom in March from a crisis that only started in February. Current modelling suggests that late Q3 is more probable, he said. Ms. Hazlitt went on to outline that during the global financial crisis, unemployment roughly peaked at 6% in early 2009 and remained elevated until the first quarter 2010 before beginning a downward trend with a more energised global economy. However, the current economic climate is unlikely to follow the same path, with the employment market feeling the heat for at least three more quarters. Here in 2020, the unemployment rate, even with the government stimulus, is already predicted to be many times what it was previously. And it is suggested that only in the second quarter can the true impact of the crisis on the economy be measured. Unemployment will be elevated for at least a year and will still need accommodation well into 2021. And the health crisis and its attendant emergency measures are set to deliver a profound shock to the residential tenancy market. According to an article in The Conversation by Dillian Thampapalini, senior lecturer at ANU College of Law. How it works out is anybody's guess, he said, but it is looking like a crisis. Banks and governments have acted quickly. The major banks are deferring mortgage payments for up to 6 months for customers whose income is hit by the crisis. New South Wales and Tasmania have introduced bills that will make it difficult for landlords to evict tenants or terminate leases during the crisis. The rushed laws are designed to prevent a raft of evictions and a spike in homelessness, but they raise almost as many questions as they answer. Both laws put power in the hands of the minister, giving that person the power to make regulations during the crisis. Tasmania's more closely prescribes what the minister can do, and both are temporary. The New South Wales Act has effect for 6 months and the Tasmanian bill for 120 days, although it can be extended by 90 days. Neither law excuses tenants from their liability to pay rent. They merely prevent evictions during the emergency period. In effect, they say that although the tenants can stay, then landlords can later sue them for arrears. And while on paper this suggests landlords will get their money, in practice they might not, and some will be tempted to issue notices of termination ahead of the minister taking action. The minister's regulations would most likely be prospective, meaning landlords would seem to be able to get away with it, but whether a tribunal would enforce the notice is another question. The Tasmanian bill only permits landlords to apply for terminations where the landlord is in hardship. And the New South Wales law has less detail, but would probably do the same. In any event, most landlords who are evicted would only want to relet, and that will prove difficult with inspections prohibited. Sick tenants are unlikely to be evicted, whatever the law. That is in nobody's interests. Cooperation in a crisis is desirable, but it is fraught in practice, and representations made by landlords with the best of intentions can become binding under the equitable law of estoppel. In essence, once landlords make representations, they cannot be stopped from going back on those representations. And in an environment where fortunes change quickly, this might become problematic. Contract law is replete with cases of agreements varied or entered into with the best of intentions that ultimately turn sour. Given there are tough and uncertain times ahead, a better approach than rush laws might be a pragmatic one of exhorting both landlords and tenants to take the legitimate interests of each other into account. If laws are to be made, there ought to be extensive consultation, even in the current crisis. This is doable and a good idea. And the Australian Bankers Association today said that banks will help commercial landlords who help tenants through the current emergency. Australia's banks will extend the six-month deferral of loans, building on the ABA's small business relief package, to 30,000 more businesses across the country. This support now extends to 98% of all businesses with a loan from an Australian bank. Businesses with total business loan facilities up to $10 million, up from $3 million small business threshold previously, will now be able to defer repayments for loans attached to their business for 6 months. These businesses are generally much larger and employ a greater number of people, so this extension of support will apply to an additional $100 billion of business loans. Combined with measures already announced, it will mean a six-month deferral of loan payments will apply to up to $250 billion worth of loans, with extra cash available to 425,000 businesses to cope with the crisis. And during this period, banks will also agree to not enforce business loans for non-financial breaches of the loan contract, such as changes in valuations. And the new measures will apply to all sectors of the economy and on an opt-in basis. Under the conditions that, firstly, commercial property landlords provide an undertaking to the bank that for the period of the interest capitalisation, they will not terminate leases or evict current tenants for rent arrears as a result of the health emergency, that customers have advised that its business is affected by said emergency, that customers were current in terms of existing facilities 90 days prior to applying, and that interest is capitalised, either meaning the term of the loan is extended or payments are increased after the deferral period. And meantime, over in Switzerland, the Basel Committee's oversight body, the Group of Central Banks Governors and Heads of Supervision, the GHOS, endorsed a set of measures to provide additional operational capacity for banks and supervisors to respond to the immediate financial stability priorities resulting from the impact of the crisis. It's important that banks and supervisors are able to commit their full resource to respond to the impact of the health issue. This includes providing critical services to the real economy and ensuring that the banking system remains financially and operationally resilient. The measures endorsed by GHOS today aim to prioritise those objectives, and we remain ready to act further if necessary. Today's measures will free up operational capacity for banks and supervisors as they respond to the economic impact of the crisis. And the committee will continue to closely monitor the impact on banks and supervisors and respond as necessary in coordination with the Financial Stability Board and other standard-setting bodies on cross-cutting issues. That said, GHOS members unanimously reaffirm their expectation of full, timely and consistent implementation of all Basel III standards based on this revised timetable. Current events demonstrate once again the importance of a resilient financial system, which these reforms will help further reinforce. And locally, the Australian Prudential Regulatory Authority, APRA, of course, for short, today announced that it's deferring its scheduled implementation of the Basel III reforms in Australia by 1 year. APRA's decision further supports authorised deposit-taking institutions in dedicating time and resources to maintaining their operations and supporting customers in response to the crisis. This approach is also consistent with the recent decision by the Basel Committee, as we've just discussed. And they're going to defer from January 2022 to January 23, the internationally agreed start dates for the Basel III standards. Importantly, as Australian ADIs are well capitalised, APRA says, and meeting the unquestionably strong benchmarks set by APRA in 2017, they already have sufficient capital to meet the new requirements. Today's announcement, therefore, does not impact the level of capital ADIs are required to hold, but rather defers adjustments to the reallocation of capital across various portfolios. And Wayne Byers also said today, in an environment such as this, you want the financial system to be a shock absorber to the broader economy. Back in 2008, the financial system was at the heart of the crisis and actually amplified the crisis through the rest of the economy. What you would hope by building up the buffers is they allow the financial system to act as a shock absorber rather than something that amplifies the shock. Achieving a stronger capitalization has not been an end in itself. It has been built up for a purpose. APRA's objective in building up the capital strength of the system has been to ensure it is available to be drawn down upon if needed in times such as this. And over in the super industry, it's clear that many are already feeling the strain. And in fact, Nucleus Wealth published a very interesting report today, which essentially said that master trusts are effectively paying out that for those people who want to leave. But that means that those still in those funds will be left holding the baby. You can read the full story on the DFA blog. The link is in below. And according to the Financial Standard, while early access to super due to financial hardship is already available, dealing with such volumes of members now accessing this option all at once is unprecedented. Link Group Chief Executive John McMurtry told Financial Standard applying, the early access provision cannot be compared to the implementation of past regulatory changes. Implementing regulatory changes is something we manage frequently. However, the challenge lies in the speed and breadth of change that the early access changes will need to be implemented. The administrator is already currently working through the protecting your super and putting members' interests first reforms, and Link hasn't ruled out increasing its workforce to accommodate the changes. It is still working through the solutions that are available. We're currently working with super funds and the ATO to understand the best solution to managing both the volume and the speed at which this needs to be implemented. There is already hardship access available today. However, the current processes do not lend themselves to large volumes, and there will need to be some adjustments to both technology and processes to accommodate. And some Treasury communications are already directing people who have lost their jobs as a result of the crisis and want early access to the retirement savings to the MyGov website, with no clear mention of how long Superfund members may actually have to wait for that money. However, the official deadline given to Superfunds is the 20th of April 2020. Applications will go directly to the ATO through the MyGov website. We are working tirelessly to have this in place for April, although this tight deadline restricts the amount of changes we're able to make to our current processes. There will obviously be a large number of people who will seek early access to their super in this difficult time, and coupled with the tight timeline, this poses a challenge to the industry. And also, looking at super, the House of Representatives Standing Committee on Economics Chair Tim Wilson has called out super funds that have said they are experiencing liquidity issues, saying it is inconsistent with evidence previously provided to the committee. Many super funds have spoken of liquidity issues since the outbreak of the crisis due to the market crash and the government stimulus package allowing struggling members to gain early access to up to $20,000 of their super. Wilson has called out these funds, saying it is inconsistent with evidence provided to the committee during its ongoing review of the superannuation sector. In the last round of hearings, the superannuation sector dismissed the committee's concerns about liquidity associated with the structure of their funds, Wilson said. Considering the super funds are now claiming liquidity issues, which is inconsistent with the spirit of evidence they had previously submitted, the committee is reserving its right to hold a hearing with APRA and the superannuation sector in the interest of financial stability. The committee has not yet provided a date for the new round of hearings. And now, of course, if you stand back and think about what we've been talking about, it's getting to the implementation stage of a number of these things. And frankly, in Australia, implementation often falls apart. So it'll be very important to hold people accountable, and especially where large organisations who may have capital available choose to drag their feet for no real reason. And it's going to be very hard to call them out, but it's something which does need to be done. And I welcome Tim Wilson's commentary with regard to the superannuation sector in particular. Now we're going to hear more about this ahead, because we're moving from the ideas stage to the execution and implementation stages. But the real issue is that unless money can flow soon, direct to households, this is going to be too little, too late. And I fear, looking at the latest data from my surveys, which I will share with you later in the week, we are already seeing significant levels of the body count rising as more households experience financial distress. This is really a very painful, drawn out and uncomfortable process for government, but also for businesses and, of course, for individuals. And I just hope we don't lose sight of the fact that at the end of the day, the buck stops with individual households, their loan commitments, and their budgets. And before I finish, let's just go through the markets. So the local markets actually had quite a good day today, with the ASX 200 up 7% to 5,181. This is a real sign of a bear market, of course. The Australian Financials Index was up 8.8% to 4,282. And even the real estate trusts were up 3.63% to 993. But the volatility index was higher, up 5.52% to 4,193. And the ASX futures is looking ahead, up 5.48% to 5,100. So there may even be more rises ahead. And of course, this is partly in response to the government stimulus package, which was announced today. ANZ was up 3.65% to 1617. CBA was up 3.3% to 1692. NAB was up 3.1% to 1578. And Westpac was up 3.9% to 1571. The Bank of Queensland was up 5.65% to 505. Bendigo and Adelaide Bank was up 7.33% to 644. And Suncorp was up 5.7% to 871. Macquarie was up again, up 5.33% to 84.60. And AMP was up 1.57% to 129. Genworth Mortgage Insurers was up 8.63% to 182. And McGrath Real Estate was down 4.76% to 20 cents, I'm sure in response to the very low auction clearance rates over the weekend. Ellerbrick Road was at 5.8 cents. AFG was down 2.27% to 129. Mortgage Choice was up 8.62% to 63 cents. And CMEC was up 5.3% to 22.85. The Aussie US dollar was down 0.68% to close at 61.30. And the Euro Aussie dollar was down 0.07% to 1.8075. The two-year bond was down 0.78% to 0.256, and the 10-year bond was down 0.06% to 0.787. So the Reserve Bank is doing its job, keeping yields under control. The Aussie Gold Cross was down 0.1% to 2,645, and the Bitcoin Aussie Cross was up 1.4% to 10,252. And just looking ahead, the S&P 500 futures is down 0.77% to 2,504. And the NASDAQ 100 futures is also down just a little, 0.63% to 7,520. So we continue to see market volatility, although it must be said that all of the massive stimulus from governments and from central banks are definitely having an impact on the way the market is viewing things. But remember, I go back to my fundamental point. Markets are trying to estimate future cash flows for companies, and it's almost impossible in the current environment to forecast what those cash flows may look like. Nobody knows how long this is going to go on for. Nobody knows how deep the falls will be. So we definitely have not reached a point of any sort of resolution yet. I'll come back tomorrow and give you another update on all of the late breaking news. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.